you've already given me a description saying it was a goal kick. The goalkeeper and the forward clashed and it became a goal kick. So that means the goalkeeper didn't come into contact with the ball.
This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Hello again and welcome to the Referee's World podcast, which offers education and training for referees of all levels. My name's Darren Cullum. I'm affiliated with Somerset FA. My colleague is Richard Mellon. He is the technical manager referees at UAEFA based in Dubai and will bring our guest in just a moment. First of all, Rich, I have a schoolboy error that I need to share with you and I'm dreading the response and even the seriousness on your face suggests that, oh, hang on, here we go.
Let's call it apprehension.
Apprehension. Okay.
Let me sit down, make sure I'm sat down here because I feel as though I'm going to fall if I don't sit.
Well, I've already had a little bit of a debrief from my close refereeing colleagues who attended the game that I was doing on Wednesday night, just to give you sense of time and day. It's currently 1:30, Friday afternoon, the 25th of February. It's fairly chilly here in the UK. It will be nice and bright and breezy and warm in Dubai. And my guest, who we'll bring into in just a moment, or our guest, sorry, is sat with snow outside. And for him, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, or just gone 8 o'clock in the morning. But first, my schoolboy error, Rich, at a game, a semi-final where I was in the middle on Wednesday night, so 2 days ago, and there was a caution that I gave, and this was the situation. Attacker comes in, keeper comes out, there's a little bit of a clanging together. I didn't think it was a penalty. Ball went out of play for a goal kick, and then I issued a yellow card to the goalkeeper for being a bit reckless with his approach, even though the ball had gone out of play. Now, after the game, I obviously had to explain that situation to my colleagues, Brian and Rob, who obviously you know very well. And I got pasted for it because it should have been a penalty and I didn't give a penalty. Your thoughts?
I was going to stop you midstream, but your description of the incident tells me that it's a penalty. You've already given me a description saying it was a goal kick. The goalkeeper and the forward clashed and it became a goal kick. So that means the goalkeeper didn't come into contact with the ball.
Which means
the last touch was the forward. So consequently, I'm going to treat you like a schoolboy because you said schoolboy error.
Schoolboy error.
Come on. I know. Think of the simple...
I know.
What's the word? Simple recognition. Keep these things simple. Don't overthink it. If you, by your description, you told me through that description, bit of a reckless challenge. Wow, that's already a penalty. It's a foul. If it's in the box, penalty.
Yeah.
Maybe a caution. Was it a legit attempt with the hands or with the feet?
I think he sort of one of those sort of when in clashes.
Yeah, you're clapping your hands for the TV.
I know.
The listeners cannot see you.
Yeah.
So, okay. Describe the contact between the referee. Between the forward and the defender.
I'm ashamed, Rich. I'm ashamed because.
Well, we've got to learn from this.
Yeah.
We've
okay.
got to learn.
So the keeper went in. From memory, he went running, standing up, sliding in. You know, he sort of ran in. And there was a bit of a. There was a bit of contact between him and the forward. The forward did make a bit of a meal of it, though. He was a proper actor, this one.
No. Don't try and defend your decision.
Okay. All right, I was wrong.
You've clearly got it wrong. Admitted that prior to telling me what you did. So don't say that he made a meal of it. Foul contact is foul contact.
Yeah.
Careless, reckless, or excessive. You've got, by the sound of it, and your description was reckless, at the moment, I'll be in between careless contact, foul contact, and reckless. Mm. So I'll sit there. Tell me a bit more about the actual goalkeeper. And he was running to the play at the player to make a challenge for the ball.
He was running to make a challenge for the ball to get the ball,
So genuine attempt to play the ball.
Yeah.
Okay. The goalkeeper in his penalty area is entitled to use pretty well any part of his body, isn't he?
Yeah.
Because he's the one that's allowed to use his hands in the penalty area. Mm. So consequently, if he makes contact with the player, even though he's using his hands, maybe lower down on the ground when he comes running out and dives at the ball, his arms catch the defender across the legs, as opposed to holding the attacker I said defender, sorry, but I meant attacker. When you think about holding, the keeper can be guilty of that as well. He can be guilty of pushing for obvious reasons. Mm. All the things that apply to players, including the goalkeeper, can happen anywhere. So think about the contact, the type of contact it was. And if he went for the ball, genuine attempt for the ball, you may caution. Did you think about Dogso?
No, I didn't. It wasn't Dogso. No. Okay. Nobody anywhere said anything about Dogso.
You're quite emphatic there. That was very good. Good response.
So,
but maybe here we've got something that you should consider. Why self-analyze? Why did you get it wrong? Where was your thought process?
My thought process.
What were you looking at? Were you looking at the corner flag or something?
No.
What were you looking at? Focus, concentration.
Speechless, mate.
Angles.
Speechless.
Mm. Movements.
I was right on top of it. I was right behind it.
Maybe that's the problem. You were too close.
Mm. Yeah, okay.
Maybe that's the problem. Too close.
Can we move on?
Five yards from it. No, I'm going to grill you until we finish this. Let's cover all the eventualities. Being too close is not the best thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to sacrifice when you're going in the opposite direction. Sometimes you have to sacrifice proximity to make sure you've got the right angle. Okay? So if you're running into the penalty area, you can't, it's a big clearance upfield and it's going into the penalty area. The forward's chasing it. The goalkeeper's coming out. You can see possible contact from, they're 20 yards apart. Mm-hmm. The time it takes to close that gap down, seconds, only seconds. You've got to start thinking very, very quickly. Penalty area instance. I don't know if this was meant to be, Darren, but today I pulled out a topic here, incidents in and around the penalty area, and you've just come out with one.
Wow, there you go.
A gem. Okay, so I'm just going to summarize my thoughts on this.
Go on then. Hurry up, because our guest is waiting.
Position, angles, on your toes, moving forward, creating an angle, okay? Maybe, depending on where it is in the penalty area, you need to be aware of the assistant referee and can the assistant referee make a contribution. You said this was a semi-final.
Yes.
So you had neutral assistance.
Yeah, neutral assistance. And the assistant concerned thought it was a penalty like everybody else did on the field. And he actually started to run round towards the position that he would take up for a penalty. Okay. So,
Would you expect the assistant referee to have made a signal to say, I'm giving you help here?
Did you
look at the assistant referee?
No, I didn't. And that was my other mistake. I didn't even look at it. I just went with my decision and that was it.
Schoolboy error.
Bad.
Quote.
Okay, at this point,
you're thrashed. You're
I'm well and truly thrashed. I'd like to welcome our guest who we told you about on the podcast in the previous episode. He's called Jason Wilson. He contacted us from Kentucky, USA, because he just recently stumbled across the podcast and is, hopefully, fingers crossed, benefiting from it. He wrote us a nice long email about how he's enjoying what he's hearing and learning from it as well. So we thought, well, let's get him on the podcast to talk about his background, a bit about refereeing in the States as well. And I'd just like to welcome Jason Wilson. Welcome.
Thank you very much. And I got to tell you, just the last, you know, 2-3 minutes listening to the two of you, it's... more value on more value at every podcast. So I'm fulfilled even more for the last 2.5 minutes. So thank you both.
I thought when I was watching you, because we're obviously recording this to put up on YouTube at some point, I was watching you whilst I was talking to Rich, and Rich has given me a pasting, and obviously you can see all this going on, and you can probably see the embarrassment in my face of this. And I'm thinking, oh, hopefully it's a point here that Jason maybe had to pick up on as he progresses through his refereeing career. So just tell us a bit about your background, Jason. Tell us a bit about your refereeing as well.
Long story short, I've got 3 children who have all played at various levels, 2 boys who continue to play at a relatively high level. I found myself refereeing when they both had to take it on themselves. In an effort to partially fund a trip with a state group going actually over to London. And I found myself sitting in the car waiting on them for 2 or 3 matches. And I thought, well, I can at least get some sort of physical benefit out of it, and perhaps this is something I can enjoy with my boys. And I've really wound up finding that this is a place that, in my advancing years, I feel like I can excel, and I really enjoy. It's something I never anticipated loving as much as I do. So that's where I found I wish I'd found sooner in life.
I was going to say, I was fortunate to find it when I was 28. How old were you, Da?
I was, I think I was 27, 26, 27.
Okay.
So we were about the same age, yeah. Jason, just tell us about your aspirations as a referee.
Well, so, and you pointed out, Darren, you know, we're similar in age. I would like to stretch myself as far as I can.
Thank you. I like that. I like similar in age. I'll take that.
He's younger. Right.
I'm keenly aware that I've only got, you know, that I'm slowing down as I age. But I'm fortunate that I've got a good fitness base underneath me. And so I can still keep up with the highest level of matches that I've been given. I'm still able to well keep up with the players. So, but I'm keenly aware that in the not too distant future, that's going to fade, and my abilities are going to kind of, you know, tail off as well. So for me personally, what I'd really like to be in a position where I can see how far I can. And I'm not so daft to think that I'm going to get to the, you know, any professional league or something like that, but could I stretch and could I get some important games within this state? Perhaps. Yes, perhaps. That's what I'd like to push my abilities and see how far I can go. And listening to your podcast has helped a lot. You know, you talk about protecting your profile and doing what you, and so that has been an invaluable thing to me, because I approach my career, if you will, and not that it is my career, but my refereeing, how I approach it in that mindset, but with the background from what the two of you say a lot, and it's been wildly helpful.
Can I ask you, in America, the longevity of a referee, is that capped via age, or is it capped via a level of fitness? Because here in the UK, it used to be capped at an age of, what was it, Rich? 44, 46?
45 when I had to come off the national list.
So no matter how good you were, how fit you were, you got to 45 and then that was it. You had to take a back seat. Now it's very different.
On the professional level, I'm not sure if there is a cap. I will tell you that in the areas that I could reasonably aspire to, there is definitively not a cap, because there is a shortage here. Much as I know that you guys have spoken about elsewhere. So there's a definitive shortage. And so I think that sometimes you see that, and sometimes perhaps at the expense of the game, and the expense of an official's ability to cover, you know, either the line or the center. So I'm not worried that I will probably age out until, you know, an extended period down the road. But the question for me is, I want to do it to the highest level, the most competitive level that I can, and come off the pitch and feel like I've done a respectable job. And that's probably going to be a limitation that I impose on myself.
From the position that I can speak, Jason, as a mature referee, and Darren might smile by that description, but I finally did my last game as a referee through my body telling me that's time. I was 3 years ago, 62. And my body told me that you can't keep trying to push yourself as hard as what you are. I wasn't pushing myself particularly hard, not like I did when I was in the professional days and trying to make big calls. Not that every game has a big call. It's just that the expectation was greater in the professional game than what it was when I was down at grassroots. But when I returned back to grassroots, I still had that pride that I wanted to deliver a performance that I was satisfied with. And I think you'll come to that as well. In your own mind, when your body tells you it's about time you started slowing down, then you'll listen to that message. And I don't regret any of it. I sorely miss it. It's a drug. It is, you know. And we talk about our friends that listen to the podcast. And I just say to anybody, when you feel as though everything is against you, there is a time that you need to step back, slow down, have a break. Don't chuck the whistle in the bin and say that's enough, no more ever. Just take time out, because your body's tired, your mind's tired, you're exhausted, you've been hammered by players, you've been chastised by spectators, perhaps, just slow down and have a break. Mm. That's the easiest piece of advice I could ever give anybody, because I've had to do it.
Jason, how would you describe your style of refereeing?
I am always hesitant and loath to go to resort to the card. I try to manage from the beginning.
Okay.
I'm a communicator. I would, and on occasion that will work against me. There have been a few times where I probably should have been a little more direct and pulled it a little bit sooner, but I think it's also part and parcel of who I am. So I will try to manage, interpersonally. I'm not the guy that's going to chat with them up and down the pitch, but I will put forth, and I've discovered the longer I've done this, the more physical effort I put in and the more I get myself in a position where it is difficult for someone from the bench or from the sideline to say we're out of position, then I get more leeway. If it's a call could have gone this way or that way, if I put myself in that position and they see that I've given them a full effort, the full match, there's a lot less that I catch. And so I think that by, honest effort, and I'll if I say, you know what, I might have made a mistake, I think that goes a long way as well, too. If I owned my own humanity, I think that serves me well.
I agree with that. I had another couple of little errors in the game we were talking about at the beginning of this. And as I said to my assistants as well in the pre-match, if my decision is wrong, stand tall and make sure that I am corrected. And if that's the case, I will change my decision. Jason, I'd like to pick up on a point that you put down in the email, and that was about the sin bin, because you were a little unsure and you were questioning it slightly. And then you did eventually come back and say, no, I found another episode of the podcast which has fully explained it. Are you happy with the whole sin bin thing? And is it something that you've used yourself?
Well, we don't have available to us.
Oh, it's not available in the States.
At least, I can't speak for the whole of the country, but I haven't. I've until your podcast, I literally hadn't heard of it.
Oh, right, that's interesting. I wasn't aware of that.
It's used in other sports, though, isn't it? The sin bin.
Yeah. Hockey, right?
Rugby union. Yeah.
So, I think it's an interesting idea. I think it's. There's the potential, at least as I read, and tell me if I'm wrong, but there is a ramification for the card to the team as well, Ben. And so I think that there's perhaps some, if I'm reading it right, there's some social pressure, but also there's a definitive team impact to that being given.
Definitely.
I think that's kind of an interesting nuance. So I feel like I've wrapped my arms around it. I mean, there are some nuanced questions that I don't fully. I mean, is he brought back on like after an injury where the player is taken off and then the center has to allow him back on? Or is it like a hockey game where, there's a fourth official who opens up the door and the skater's back on as soon as his 2 minutes are done? Mm. But I feel like I've got my arms generally around the concept, and I think it could be beneficial, but I'm not sure if we ever get benefit of it.
As an active referee, this is quite new here in the UK. I think, is it 3 years now, Rich? Three, four seasons?
Years, yeah.
Yeah, three years they've been using it at the grassroots level. And as an active referee that has come back onto refereeing after a 3 or 4 year gap, initially I was a little nervous about it, but it is a great tool to have in your pocket, so to speak. And I have embraced it. I've used it. And it does work. You can certainly. I used it twice on the in fact, there's a lot going on that game on Wednesday night that we've been talking about. So I used it twice on Wednesday, and it worked effectively for me. After 10 minutes, the players came back on, and I didn't hear any claptrap from them at all. So yeah, it does work.
With the 10 minutes that, because it's 10 minutes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So with
Eight minutes in youth games.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you find that it changes the way that you approach cards at all? Are you maybe a little bit more hesitant to use the card? Or does it push you more towards management because of that, playing down a man?
No, it's a fantastic management technique. It's really good, because here in the UK, I don't know what it's like in the States at the moment, but since coming back after the pandemic, levels of dissent and foul and abusive language towards referees has increased, and there's been a lot more reported incidents of it. So the sin bin has become very, very helpful, because it basically knocks a team down to 10 men, or if there's a player already missing, 9 men. for a short period of time. And as you know, in football, a lot can happen in a 10-minute stretch. So what I have found on the times in which I've used it, again, there was one player in particular that at the start of the game, it was pointed out to me by a friend that that player there, you're going to get a load of lip from. Okay, and sure enough, within 15 minutes, I got that lip. I warned him, I set him up, and then he gave me a bit more lip shortly after. And so I sent him to the sin bin. So it works an absolute treat because he came back on after his 10 minutes and I didn't hear a peek from him.
Effective management, that is, Jason. Darren, that's effective management. And, you know, that's what we look for as match referees.
Okay, I'm aware that we are slowly running out of time once again, and obviously Jason has to get back to his day-to-day duties in the office. Before you go, I think it would just be very quickly interested to see the state of refereeing. I don't know if that's the right phrase to use, Rich. The state of refereeing in the US, because you mentioned to us off-air about certain incidences here in the UK, which you and your colleagues in America are like looking at from outside and thinking, wow, what's going on here? You know, do you get that kind of thing going on there?
Not nearly to the level, to at least, and of course, you know, with social media, I think that you see the worst of everything, right? Mm-hmm. Because that happens to be what sells. But there is not that level of drama and player confrontation in most levels until you get to the MLS or perhaps the USL, which is a step below. So I don't see that level of
yeah, I know what you're trying to
emotion. The level right, of emotion.
Yeah, yeah, right. I don't see that level of emotion thrown in. Nearly on the levels that I appear to be seeing it on over on that side of the Atlantic. So it is curious to me, but I think that we are somewhat fortunate, not that we are without it entirely, because there's always, and I've dealt with those supporters who have their issues, but it doesn't seem to be as prevalent here yet, and I'll knock on wood.
Yeah. Okay, it was an interesting way of finding out how things are over there in the States. Now, we're going to carry on recording for the YouTube channel, okay? So if you want to find out a bit more about some more questions that Jason has to pitch to us, then jump onto the YouTube channel, subscribe to it, and then you can watch a bit more in-depth information. But as far as the actual podcast is concerned, we're going to wrap it up here. Rich, again, any final words from you before we finish today?
On this occasion, no.
Thank you. Jason, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Rich, thank you very much. As always, an absolute pleasure. You've been listening to the Referees World podcast. Don't forget, there's more on the YouTube channel. Just search out the Referees World podcast.
Hey, presto.
This is Referees World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.